What's up, Tape Traders? It's me, JD, and we are back finally after that short hiatus of a month. I am back, and we're going to kick things off again with the Tape Traders Guide to 90s Pro Wrestling. The past month has been pretty incredible. A lot of different things happening, a lot of different opportunities. Hopefully, over the next few weeks, we will try and get, you know, Johnny back. Uncle Tony's going to stop by. A bunch of people are going to come by, and we're going to discuss the last month of fantastic bookings and great opportunities. But tonight, we are going to return. Our return episode is going to be with Quentin Charisma. We are going to pick up right where we left off. If you remember the last episode, and if you don't, make sure you go back and check it out. Go to the Podbean app and check out Tape Trader's Guide to 90s Pro Wrestling, and check out the last two episodes of Quentin Charisma's journey. And at the end of the last interview that we had, he was talking about his time and wrestling a wrestler named Midget D and squashing him, throwing all of his body weight on in a shoot because he had stolen something from Quentin. So we're going to kind of pick off right where we left off. And, you know, like I said, it has been a month since the last time that we did one, so we're going to kind of get the feel back and everything. So without further ado, let me get Quentin on the line for everyone. All right, Quentin, we are recording, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing, you know, just hanging in there, man.
So, it's been a while since the last time we talked, and so we're going to kind of catch up and go over where we left off and anything that we may have missed, throughout the last part of the journey. So where we left off, man, is you were just telling me a story about Midget D and squashing Midget D. Every time that we've ended, the last two podcasts that we've ended has been with something just ridiculous.
Yeah. Stiffed him on the splash, on purpose. It was in Fayetteville, Tennessee. Yeah, that was like, I'll say it was early, you know, like winter of 93. But, yeah, actually, man, I went back and looked at the last one, and I realized that, man, I've skipped so much stuff, and my memory's really getting really bad. Uh-huh. And so when I went back and listened, I was like, okay. And I was like, oh, hold on. What about, you know? So I went back down, and you know, I went through, I was like, man, I looked a lot of stuff, so... There's kind of a few things I'd like to kind of go back over in the summer of 92. Is that, and we went over, you know, we did like, we talked about Shelbyville and
yeah.
Hohenwald and stuff like that. There were a few things that, during that time I was kind of wanting to talk about.
Yeah.
I remember now.
You were tag teaming, right?
Me and Mark was tag teaming and, we went to Shelbyville like in June of 92. That same time, I decided to bleach my hair. So I went completely blonde, and so that was really interesting because I didn't realize after you went to bleach your hair that I was supposed to, you know, if you want to keep it blonde, you got to dye your roots about once a month.
So,
if you don't, it's going to go away. So, man, that I really wasn't making no money. So that kind of was going to backfire on me. Because basically, I had to go and buy all that crap and get somebody, and then I had to go pay somebody to bleach my hair. So, so I tried to do it. Tried to do it myself, and it was like orange. So, I had to find somebody to do it, you know. So, I went blonde that was the first time I went blonde.
Did you did you just like, in your head, was it just that, you know, Ric Flair had long blonde hair, Hogan had long blonde hair, you know, was that just like.
I just want my hair, like wrestler, you know, blonde hair was the thing, you know?
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I kept it for, I think, let's see, that was in summer of 92. I think I kept it all the way till like summer of 94. So I had like 2 years there. I had blonde hair. Yeah. So, and, that's when we first went to, Shelbyville. And I forgot the first night we were there, Chris Kern was working with this guy named, American Warrior.
Uh-huh.
He was a local guy from Shelbyville and basically kind of did like a, Ultimate Warrior ripoff gimmick, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I'll never forget that they went to have their match, and, you know, we were sitting back there getting ready for our match, and all of a sudden I heard somebody yelling. I was like, oh man, what's going on? And this guy comes back, and his whole front teeth are broke off.
Oh.
And just blood just pouring out. I'm like, oh crap, what happened to this guy? And Kern, and here comes Chris Kern, like, oh, brother, man, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. And the guy was on the floor, and Kern come off the top rope onto the floor, and when he hit him, the guy's face just, like, planted onto the floor and just busted his teeth. I mean, he's like, it didn't, like, kind of knock him out clean. They're all, like, broke off, and
it was all messed up.
I was like, yeah, so I mean, if it knocked them out, like, clearly would have, you know, probably wouldn't been that bad, but they were all broke off and stuff, and you're like, man, you must have some major dental work. And I'm sitting there, I was like, man, that's not good. I was sitting there, I kept thinking to myself, I was like, man, that could happen to me. And I was thinking, that's not good, because my teeth is like the only thing I got going for me, my teeth and my hair. And I was like, man, if I have this, I'm in trouble. It was one of those, you know, little things that you know, kind of remember stuff happening. Yeah, I'm sure I looked up and this guy comes by and he's just pouring blood and he's just, look, those chick foots are all jacked up, you know, I'll never forget that.
And here you are, not even properly trained, and you're just kind of sneaking around in the business. So I can't imagine what you're thinking.
You what?
So I can't imagine what you were thinking.
Yeah, I know. I was like, gosh, man. Like I said, that my teeth was very good going, and I was like, gosh, what's going on to my teeth? So, yeah, it was one of those things stuck in my head all these years. I just remember that.
Sure.
And, you know, we were talking about the last time, the hole in wall at that Barnes Auction Barn, the little shed-looking place?
Yeah, yeah.
They actually had a big 4th of July show, and we got booked on it, and they had it like at 1 o'clock in the day.
Uh-huh.
And the whole time I wrestled in some hot buildings. That was the hottest building I've ever wrestled in. Because like I said, it was like a shed that had like a tin roof on it.
Oh.
And man, it was like 1 o'clock in the day. Man, it was, oh my gosh. They had a guy, no lie, they had a guy out there. We'd go out there like every 30 minutes with a hose pipe and was spraying off the roof.
Oh, wow.
Trying to keep it cool. It was so hot in that. Like I said, it was like a little shed, you know? It was, oh man, it was one of the things I remember. We talked about that building a lot last time. But
yeah.
That, man, that stuck out in my mind. I think it was the hottest building I ever worked in, man. It was. You know, if they would have had it at night, it wouldn't have been as bad. I mean, it would have been hot, but, man, it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It was so bad.
What do you think, what's the worst ring that you've ever worked in that you can think of?
Oh, whew. There's probably, I don't know, man. There's been several that were pretty bad. I worked a show, I want to say early 97. No, hold on. No, what, 97? It was sometime in 90, I think it was early 96. Mo and Mabel ran Springfield.
Southern Extreme Wrestling?
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Southern Extreme Wrestling?
It was before that. It was like the first show they ever ran. I don't think they even had a name for it yet.
Okay.
This was like the first time they ever ran a show. And they ran, I want to say it was sometime in 96.
Okay.
Or it's either early 96 or late 95, but it was Springfield. And nobody ever drew it in Springfield before then. I mean, Springfield was dead.
Uh-huh.
And they actually drew a good house. And the first match was, I'm pretty sure it was Ashley Hudson and Chris Michaels, and the ring broke.
Oh.
It fell in.
Oh, no.
It fell in. Yeah. Yeah, it was, and so then I was on second with this guy, it was one of their train, it was one of Mabel's trainees. His name was Mike. I can't remember, but he was a big old guy. And I remember Mabel come over and goes, he said, "Now he's green now, just keep it simple for him." I said, "All right, I will." So we go out there, and the ring is like a seesaw.
Oh, man.
And there's like holes. The boards are slid apart, and so there's gaps, like holes.
Oh, man.
And when you do step on a, board, it comes like a seesaw. It was, you couldn't do nothing, man. It was awful. We just basically just leaned on each other and just, like, you know, just brawled on each other in the corners.
Right.
You couldn't do nothing. I mean, it was dangerous.
Right.
And then probably the second worst ring I was in probably was one night in McMinnville. I want to say it was 2000. Yeah, it was around 2000. Sometime in the year 2000 in McMinnville, when Brian Cheatham was running it, and he got sold a ring, and it was. It had the boards were that wouldn't they were by the time you got in there, you'd step and the boards sometimes the board would be there,
yeah,
sometimes it wouldn't,
yeah,
you know, and you'd step in holes, and man, it was awful.
Oh,
and you know, then I've been in before, they broke,
uh huh,
but those two were broke before we got in there, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I had where the boards slip. Like when the board would slip or the rope would break or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But not where the ring just was
garbage.
You know, a bad ring to get go from the get go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But those are probably the two worst that, you know, now that I've been in, you know, and but that was, yeah, it's probably the worst.
Well, thank you. I didn't mean to take you off track, but it just something just popped in my head. And so
yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, that's the last thing I remembered. So when and I told the story, I think in the first show about when me and Mark we first got booked, we had to go find some gear and stuff.
Yeah.
And we went and bought those boots, those Everlast boots.
Yeah.
So they were, you know, 'cause they were junk. They were horrible. So this is that. So we got those. And November of 92, so around June, I mean 91, I'm sorry, November of 90, November 91, so around June 92, when we was in Shelbyville, so that was, you know, what, 6 months, 7 months, or
yeah,
whatever,
yeah.
So the eyelets then started popping out.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, so they started popping out, and then, so we're just tying them through the leather, or the fake leather. And then that started, so after a couple of weeks after that, that started ripping out. So one night I was in Shelbyville, and man, it was awful. Like six of the eyelets were, actual leather part was ripped completely. So I'm sitting there trying to figure out how to lace these boots up, and I look up, and sitting across from me is Gypsy Joe and George Weingroff talking to each other. So I'm sitting there, and then I noticed they stopped talking, and they're sitting there looking at me. So I'm sitting there trying to figure out how to get these boots laced when there's no leather holes in them, but ripped out. And I'm already scared to death of Joe and George Weingroff anyway.
Right.
You know, I'm terrified of them already.
Yes.
And I'm sitting there like, oh my gosh, Joe's going to come and start beating me up because I don't know how to lace my boots up. You know?
Yes.
And I just sat there and I was like, and finally, I got them laced up, and I got up and walked up, and I was like, man, I don't think he's going to come over here and just start beating me up. And you know, you're doing the things, you just go, you know, shit, that thing, I was green and paranoid, and, you know, you hear all these horror stories of Joe beating people up, and George, you know, stretching people and sugaring people, so,
yeah.
You know, I'm just like, I'm sitting there trying to lace up these boots that are whipping on me, and they're sitting there staring at me, and I'm just, I'm freaking out, you know. Just one of those stories that, I always remember. Those boots.
Where did you buy your boots?
What's that?
Where did you buy your boots?
They were the Everlast boxing boots. We bought them at Walter Nippert's National Sporting Goods on 8th Avenue. They were the Muhammad Ali version, but they were not, they were horrible. They weren't the ones that, these are for like show or something. They didn't last, man. The dollar popped out and the leather ripped, then the sole on started cracking. In 6 months, they were trashed.
When you started buying like professional gear, How hard was it to find that stuff? Because like nowadays, like I can get on Facebook and I have on my friends list, I've got 55 different people that make gear. But
that's the next thing I was fixing to go into about how, because I was like, I had to go get some boots. And at the time, I had just left my job at HG Hill and got another job. I worked at an apartment complex out of Hickory Hollow, and I was making more money. And I got my first check, a few weeks after those boots started tearing up. I was like, I'm going to get some boots. There was no internet back then. The only place you could get boots then was, Bill Ashigan sold, but it was still the same people, out in Paris, Arkansas. They still made the boots. Adrian Adonis and his little, Adrian Creek's catalog, the Bizarre, where it was called, it had boots in it you could order. Then you had the Cliffords out of Houston. I call them Houston boots. He was the best bootmaker ever. His was, oh my gosh, he was so expensive. But I couldn't, I was like, well, I got to have some, I was like, by the time I got my check, I first did the check, and I thought, I got enough money, but I ain't got enough money to, buy a pair. And I asked that around. Anybody got a pair of used boots for sale?
Right.
Nobody had any. I said, and there's no internet. This is, summer of 92. There's no internet, no email, no nothing,
Yeah.
And so it's just word of mouth. And, nobody had boots. Nobody had any boots for sale. Nobody was getting rid of any.
Right.
And that was before, kick pads and mat shoes.
Right, sure.
So I'm like, what do I do? I can't wear these boots, and marks were starting to tear up too. And we were talking, and he said, man, what do I have to do is I have to go buy some more boxing boots. I said, man, I'm not paying for another pair of these Everlast boots.
Right.
They only last, 6 months. He said, man, let's go down here to Natural Sports Unlimited on Harding. They got those pony boxing boots. And I said, okay, well, so we went down and checked them out. And, they actually looked a lot better. The soles were better. The eyelets were regular leather. There was no, metal eyelets in them.
Yeah, sure.
And I said, well, maybe those won't, those won't rip out, the way they got them made. And I was like, well, and it had pony on the side, and it was, like, stitched. And then they had, and they took like the Nike has the leather swoosh.
Yeah, yeah.
And these had the, I guess you would call it the pony check. And I was like, well, that's got to go. So I was like, well, I could, guess I could take it. And I'm going to get them because I got to have something. And I'll just work with them.
Yeah.
So then we was walking. So we started walking around the store, and he got a pair and I got a pair. And I was like, you know what? I need some new gear. I was like, I've been wearing the same Zubat compression shorts and Powerhouse gym t-shirt, and it's looking ratty. I got a little extra money now. I need to buy something. So I was walking around, was looking at the spandex, and I saw some body glove surf outfit suits like Ray Odyssey and Sandman used to wear.
Yeah.
Sandman, when he first started. And I was like, man, the body goes, those are really neat. I went around and found me, I thought, man, and I looked at the color, had like hot pink, like neon colors, had pink and green. I was like, oh, dude, this is me.
Yeah.
I grabbed it, I go try it on. Man, my fat butt couldn't get in that thing. I tried the bigger size, too. And I wasn't that big then, And I was like, man, this sucks. Well, here's just out of question. So I put it back on the rack, and I just like, what are you going to do? So I don't know. And I just want to figure something out. And we was walking by, and there were some scuba suits. And like scuba diving, I was like, nah, that's too thick. And right beside it, there was these things called scuba skins. Uh-huh. And I said, what about this? I said, man, this might work. It was a full-length suit that zipped up, and you wear it over your scuba suit. And I said, I'm going to try this. I went to dress her and tried on fit perfect. It was full-length, long sleeves, all the way. It had, it was zipped up in it. It was a full body suit.
Yeah.
And it was black, and it had pink stripe down the sleeve, all the way from the top of the shoulder, all the way down the sleeve, all the way down your side, all the way down to the leg. It had a pink stripe all the way down. I said, oh, this is me, dude.
Right.
So I bought that. I got the boots. I went home. I took the boots and I cut the little check mark thing off the boots. It was just stitched on there. Where it had the pony written,
yeah,
it was stitched. Yeah, it was actually stitching. It was actually fabric. It's into the boot, and I was like, well, I can't rip it out. I have a hole there. So I just went. I went to Lowe's and got some pink paint. Spray paint and spray painted on paint and covered it up. So I started wearing that and so I finally had some decent looking gear, you know.
Yeah.
And I took the boots before I painted them. I was working over at Hickory Hollow at the time. I went over to the mall there's a shooting boot repair store.
Yeah.
I was about to get some crepe put on them. Because they just had like a rubber sole on them, and I was going to get some crepe put on it. And I took them over, and the guy said they couldn't put none on there because the way the sole was made, it wouldn't stick to it. So,
right.
I guess they don't get no crepe, so when I went and I painted them, and I said, everything looked pretty good then, like I said, I wasn't wearing a t-shirt no more. I was wearing the
full body suit.
Yeah, full body. I actually looked halfway decent, it wasn't wrestling boots, but, it was better than nothing the way I look at it,
So it was hard to find gear, though, right? I mean, because you kind of had to buy gear from other people when they were finished with it or whatever. Or you had to, send a letter?
You had to get K&H. You either got the gear from K&H or got it from, or you'd get it from, Andrew Street.
Uh-huh.
Or if you're lucky enough to get Danny Davis's mom to make it for you, but that was hard to get her to make it because she was busy making Danny's gimmicks and stuff all the time.
Were any of the boys sewing to, make extra money?
At the time, none of the boys around here was making. Nobody was making it.
Uh-huh.
Tommy Higgy was making masks, but that was about it. Nobody was making gear. And that time, you could go to Walmart and Kmart in the women's section and get spandex leggings.
Yeah.
But for like trunks and butchers and singlets, you couldn't. You had to get them made somewhere. So
right.
But it was hard to get stuff then. I mean you could get it, but you had to have the money.
Sure.
And the K&H stuff, somebody had to tell you about it and you had to get a catalog and all that, which K&H stuff. But,
right.
So I took out my stuff and everything. On the last one, we finished up Shelbyville. We went back to Hartsville there for a little bit. It's the first time I got hurt in a match. It was in Hartsville. It was in July of 92. Me and Mark was working, Troy Eaton and a guy named he went by Ricky Gibson. It wasn't the original one.
Uh-huh.
His actual name was Rick. He worked as Rick Valentino most of the time, but then he worked as Ricky Gibson or Rick Gibson. And he was in Hartsville. When we went back to Hartsville, he was there. He was booking it. And he could work, you know. And we started talking to him. And he tried to, you know, tell us all this stuff. He worked, you know.
Uh-huh.
He worked here, worked there, and the same. But actually, he was from Kentucky, and he, you know, he worked for the old man. And, you know, him and Todd Morton actually worked together and did some stuff together. I think they were called the Junior Rock and Roll Express. But the way he talked, you know, they were going to WCW, and he, you know, he was just putting himself over, and I was like, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's Hartsville, and you can work, so it's a plus. But anyway, so we was working a program with them, and the last night we were blowing it off because we were going back to, we're going back to Hohenwald. Hohenwald was starting back up, you know.
Yeah.
So we was going to go back to there, and we were fishing up that night, and the match, our blow-off match, I was getting the heat on Gibson, and I had him hooked, and Mark come to hit, was going to hit him, you know, and when Mark hit him, he sold, like, snapped his head back so fast and far, hit me right in the nose, and knocked me out.
Oh.
All I remember was hearing, oh, man, and that's all I remember. Next thing I know, I was on the floor, like, 10 feet away from the ring on the floor. I woke up on my back, and I was choking on my blood.
Oh, man.
My blood was going back down in my throat, and I was choking on it. It woke me up. So I roll over, and it's just pouring out. Yeah, he drilled me. Right?
Wow.
He sold just recklessly.
Yeah.
You know, I've never seen Mark hit him, he just snapped his head back. Like, you know, he got his head took off. I mean, it was just a punch, you know?
Yeah.
And, man, he cracked me right and just broke my nose. And it knocked me out.
Man.
And I was out for a couple minutes.
Uh-huh.
And I woke up. I was out on the floor. I don't know how I got there. But I was, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So that was my first time I got hurt.
Did he apologize?
He apologized. You know, and he said it was sorry thing. He told me to go up here to the hospital up here and we'll get it checked out. And I was like, dude, I ain't got no money for this.
Uh-huh.
I finally got insurance in my new job. I finally got some insurance. And I was like, dude, I'm still not going to pay for it. I'll bear it. He said, no, you make sure, you know, you're all right. He said, I'll pay for it.
Oh.
So I said, well, I'm still weary, right? So we get up there and we get in the thing. I tell the lady, I said, before we do anything, I'm not paying for this.
Right.
My name's going to be on there. And she's okay, we'll make sure. So they checked me out, and their hospital in Hartsville was about the size of, oh my gosh, it's smaller than an Aldi's. I mean, it's Hartsville. They don't have, there's nothing there. So it's, you know, it's tiny.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't believe there's a hospital at all.
I'm exactly, yes, you really is. I'm surprised it was. So they checked me, and they're looking at my nose, and they go, you're lucky that when it hit right where it broke it straight across. It didn't push it to either side.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't have, because they said, there's nothing we can do for it. You don't have to set it. It just broke the clean break all the way across. And I was like,
wow.
I was like, well, I guess I'm lucky, I guess.
Wow, yeah.
I guess the best way to have one, yeah. So that was our last night there. And like I said, we went back to doing the Hohenwald stuff. And then we went back there a few weeks. Then we started, like I said, we were doing Hohenwald Saturday. And then they called us back to Shelbyville on Thursday. We was doing Shelbyville Thursday night, Hohenwald on Saturday night. And then, out of the blue, Mark gets a call, and it's Ricky Gibson.
Uh-huh.
And he's got this big show, supposedly this big old show in August, middle of August, on a Friday night in Danville, Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
And he tells Mark, you know, I want y'all guys up here, blah, 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 blah. And Mark said, well, call Quentin. And I wasn't Quentin, man. I'm sorry. He said, call, you know, Charisma. And so he calls me, and I'm talking to him. He said, yeah, man, well, we got this show. It's, uh, it's a, you know, I'm gonna get y'all transportation, a rental car. It's just a hotel. It's gonna be catered. Huh. Oh man, it's a big deal up here. You know, we don't know any different. You know?
Yeah, sure.
I'm like, oh my gosh. He said, we'll get you a good payoff. I don't know what it is right now, but it'll be a good payoff. I was like, oh man, you know, because I'm usually getting, you know, $10.
Sure.
You know, it was like this time. So, you know, I'm like, all right, I've been working this new job, and I went in and told him, hey, is there a way I can get off early on Friday? And, you know, I told him the day, it's a Friday, and I said, yeah, it'll work out if we work it out and everything. So, that Wednesday, we'll get a call, and he's like, hey, right now, I'm still trying to line that rental car up, but, I don't think it's going to happen because something happened.
Oh man.
We can't get it, you know, and he's like, and I was like, all right. And so, that's, you know, it's up in the middle of nowhere in Kentucky. He said, I got the transportation. So I got that lined up. And I was like, okay, what is it? And he said, I got y'all gonna ride with, Troy Eaton's parents. And I said, okay. And so, well, he said, they live in Mount Juliet and y'all live in Mount Juliet, right? And I said, yeah. I said, all right, well, that's fine then. I said, okay, we'll fly with them. So, I said, but everything else, hotel and everything else, still, you know, it's a go, man, it's a go. So Thursday night, we go and work our Shelbyville show, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I get next morning, I go to work and that thing, I get off early and then I go. And they went, and my dad lives right there on the county line of Wilson County, Davidson County, right there in Mount Juliet, Hermitage area.
Yeah.
And
where
right
I live.
There, so I told. Yeah, exactly. Right, at, like a couple blocks from here, basically.
Yeah.
And so I told Troy's parents. I said, I told them where they're at. They, I'm gonna leave my car at my dad's and just meet me. You know, sit me up there. So they were gonna go and pick up Mark because they had come right by his house. And they lived like 3 miles from Mark. So they saw where I picked up Mark, and then they came around and picked up me. And the thing about the rental car, actually, this worked out better. They had a big old conversion van, dude.
Oh, okay.
With the big captain seats in the back and stuff, and it was a sweet ride. So I was like, dug it in, and Troy's dad's like, man, we got a cooler back there full of water, cold drinks, everything, you know, we got snacks. I'm like, oh, this is a lot better, you know? We didn't got to drive, we just sit back and ride, you know?
Yeah.
So that actually worked out, you know? So, and all the things, back then, your Kentucky license, your Kentucky license back then, you had to have a physical.
Uh-huh.
And you had to have turn your physical in, and then pay your, I think it was $25 or $30 for your license. But you had to have that physical.
Right.
So, another thing, that was another thing. He said he was going to pay for the license. He said, well, I said, what about the physical? Well, this is back when we were talking, you know, beforehand.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, he's like, don't worry about the, I said, I got everybody's physicals. I've been worked that out. He says, everything's worked out with commission. We got it all worked out.
Oh,
so I'm like, you know, we didn't know.
Sure.
We didn't know anything.
Sure.
Right? You know? So I said the ride up there was good. You know, we had the big van, you know, big seats and everything. And so we get up there and we get to the armory, you know, we get there early. And, so we get on there and, we go in the dressing room, you know, we'll see, you know, guys. It's basically a Hartsville crude, what he was using. And, when the referee came and said, hey, Rick, want you over here, come over here. He starts sending us one by one over to another room. And so me and Mark's turn, so we come over there, he goes, hey guys, here's your license. He goes, here's the thing for your license and everything. I need y'all to sign this and everything. Everything's good. I said, okay. So we get so we go back, we're getting dressed, all of a sudden the dude from the commission walks in.
Oh boy.
With Mike Samples. And I'm like, oh, this ain't good. And cause see Jarrett's, that's a Jarrett town. That was a Jarrett, they ran it, you know, every so many months, you know, that was their town. And Samples was working with them at the time. So yeah, I was like, oh, well, here comes the commission to shut us down, all right? So, you know, we got all these bogus, you know, physicals and everything that he was giving them. And the guy looking, you know, he was all right. He said, so you, and he looked at my name and everything. So, because you put your real name and your work name. And he's like, oh, what are you? And I was like, oh man. I was like, I didn't want to say, you know, because at the time I was just using Mr. Charisma. That's all I used at the time. You know, so I was like, Rick Charisma. He's like, all right. And I think Mark used Mark Majestic or something. I can't remember what Mark used. I can't remember. But yeah, so I still got my actual Kentucky license.
Oh, that's
Rick
cool.
Charisma on it. But yeah, it was all, and basically, you know, I guess he paid them because I was getting worried, you know, but yeah, they come up here, they was going to, I guess they were going to shut us down. They didn't, but oh yeah, he told us that the show was, you know, they done set all these advance tickets, all these sponsors. That's how they were getting the hotel and the catering from sponsors and all this. Man, there was probably 60 people there.
Oh man.
In the crowd. Yeah. And it was me and Mark worked Gibson and Todd Morton.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think Todd Morton wanted to be there. I think I have a feeling he figured out he was getting shafted on his money.
Yeah.
So he really did. And I learned something that night in the ring. I picked him up and slammed him. Well, we was working something and he called something and I can't remember what it was. It was been so long, but I learned from, like, we got to the back, he told me, he's like, we're gonna do that. I said, okay. So, but another thing I learned was, main thing I learned was, I picked him up, I slammed him. I used to do that, get on the second rope looking out, then the reverse splash.
Yeah.
You know, Billy Trash used to do it, first one I ever seen do it, then Vader started doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so I picked him up, slammed him, I said, don't move. And I slammed him. And I went up, and when I went back for the reverse splash, he moved, and I hit him
on
my leg. And I got back around, I picked him up, I said, don't move. He said, I thought you said move. And he said, when you call him something, he said, you say move or stay. He said, because if you say don't move, he said, 9 times of 10, all they're going to hear is move.
Oh.
He said, always, you know, stay or move. He said, don't do a big long sentence for it. He said, because if they don't hear it, all they're going to hear is the move part. And, you know, I said, I'm sorry, I didn't know. You know?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so after that, I'd say stay, you know.
That's how you learn. That's how you learn.
Or watch the splash, or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That, you know, don't say, you know, don't move, because most times they're all they're going to hear is move.
Right, so, right.
Yeah, but yeah, the match, like I said, the match was, it wasn't that good. But, so we get to the back and everything, and so we're, you know, show's over, and everybody kind of is like, you know, well, this sucks. You know, this is nothing like, you know, obviously everybody got the same feel we got on, you know, how it was going to be, you know, because everybody was like, this, you know, this ain't nothing like it was. So I said, what's going on with the food and catering thing? I said, oh man, we're going back to these people's house. And I was like, okay. And I said, Bud, Troy's dad, said, he knows how to get there. So we got back in the van and we drove like 30, 35 minutes from Danville to this little town called Bergen, Kentucky. I'm like, where in the crap is it? I mean, it's out of nowhere. I mean, it was out on this country road. And then we pull up this old house and we go in and there's like these big, like medical beds. Kids laying in these medical beds that are like paralyzed and stuff. And I'm like,
oh man,
what the crap is going on here? I'm like, this is weird. And I'm like, okay. I told Martin, I said, something's weird about this situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, he came in, hey guys, food's in here. So we go, I'm like, okay. So we go in the kitchen. And then, like, somebody went to Kroger and bought some cheese trays and a couple of shrimp tray, you know, little shrimp rings,
yeah.
And cupcakes and stuff. And I was like, this ain't catered. You know? I looked at Mark and said, I still like, man, we just got to make the best of it. I went and took about 30 shrimp, man, and put them on my plate. And I started tearing my shrimp up. I was catching, what is up these people laying in these beds and everything? You know, and then I was like, okay. So then I was like, and by the time it was late, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, all right. He hasn't said anything about the hotel.
Man.
I didn't hear anything except cows on the way here, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, where's the rooms at, man, for the hotel? He's like, oh, man, couldn't get the hotels, man. The sponsors, it didn't work out, so we didn't get no hotel rooms. I was like, well, where are we going to sleep? He's like, oh, man, there's couches, a couple couches over there on the floor. I was like, dude, I said, I'm not sleeping in the floor of a house. There's people laying around in medical beds.
Yeah.
And I was like, I look at Mark and Troy's dad goes, y'all want to sleep in the van? The back seat lays down flat, and those captain chairs lay down.
Yep.
I said, well, it's the van. So me and Mark go out there in the van. We're sleeping. And I said, we're out in the middle of nowhere. There's only one thing in this place called Bergen. It's a little volunteer fire department, which we parked right in front. It was across the street from this old house. So 3:30 in the morning, all of a sudden, the siren goes off.
Oh, man.
The alarm. At 3:30 in the morning, and it's going. I mean, and I'm like, "What the crap?" It goes on for about 20 minutes, and finally it cuts off. I get Marcus, man, this is horrible. he goes, you know what, man? We haven't got paid yet. I said, you know, we haven't, have we? I said, I forgot about it because everything else has been a disaster. So I was like, we haven't even got paid. So about 7 o'clock in the morning, I got up. I said, I'm going in there. I said, I'm going in. I'm going to ask them where our money's at. And I'm going to ask Bud what time we're getting out of here. Because so we had to go to, Hornwall at night.
Right.
Friday night, you know?
Right.
So I go in there, and I'm like, hey, man, where's our payoff? And he said, oh, man. He said, I'm fixing to go to town with, and he had this rat that was, with him, you know, we're fixing to go to town, and we're going to get some money out of the bank. We had to pay for this and this and this. I'm off the door last night. I had to pay for all that stuff, you know, the license from the commission. So I ain't got no cash right now, but we're going to go. I was like, oh man. I said, okay. I'm gonna ride with you. He said, okay. And I thought he was going to say. I think he thought I was going to say, oh, we'll just wait here for you. I said, I'm going to ride with you. So we get in the car with his rat. We go back into Danville. And I'm thinking, okay, we're going to go up to an ATM. We pull up to Goody's department store, you know, clothing store.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. So okay, I'm just going to, you know, see what happens. So we go into Goody's and walk around, and this rat's buying him all these clothes and stuff. And I'm like, okay. So finally, he's like, hey, man. He said, I know, man, everything hadn't worked out like I said it was going to. We had to get you to pay for all this stuff. And this was a fundraiser for instead of names people at that house, you know. He said, but, man, we had all this lined up. And Jared's come in and took all of our advertising out. And they killed us this week. They sabotaged the show. And I'm like, okay. So I was like, all right, well. And I'm like, we're going to get anything? And he goes, hand in envelopes. Here, this is for you and Mark. I was like, okay. So I open it up. It's
$20.
We got 10 apiece because we've been getting everywhere else.
Oh.
And I was like, you got to be kidding me. So I get back. So we get back, she buys all this stuff at Goody's. I'm like, gotta get some money, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I'm so frustrated. We're still green. We're trying to learn something, you know, and we're learning not to trust anybody.
Right.
We're starting to learn that. And when it sounds too good, it's not true. This is
right.
Business. So
right.
We're learning that. So I get back, And I get back and Mark's like, we're fixing to head out. I said, good. He said, do we get paid? I said, yeah. I said, look, this is what we got. He said, $20? I said, yeah, $20. He said, man, he's lied about everything. I said, I know. I said, this has been horrible. So I thought, well, we got to get back. We got to be, you know, go to Hornwall. So we get back, we get in the van, and I missed a little something. So when we're going up there, see, Troy Eaton, he actually moved up with Rick to Kentucky, and because Rick told him, man, I'm gonna start training. I'm gonna get my school. I'm gonna get going. So, you know, he said, me and you we're gonna train. We're gonna get bookings, all this. We get up there and like in a month and a half, Troy had lost like 30 pounds of weight.
Oh, wow.
And I said, damn, what's wrong? He said, man, he's lied. He said, when we were leaving that Saturday morning, he said, man, he lied about everything. He said, there was no wrestling school. There was nothing. I didn't eat. He said, I didn't eat. I starved up here.
Oh, wow.
He said, we trained a couple of times on the yard. He had no ring, nothing. He had no bookings.
Oh, wow.
Awful. Yeah. He said, so he came back home with his friend. He went back with his friends with us. So we got back, they drove us over to my dad's. We hopped in my car, me and Mark, and went straight to Hornwall. And we hadn't had a bath, shower, nothing, you know. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, God. So we get to Hornwall right at 7 o'clock, and I was just like, we start telling everybody our story. They're like, don't you know, if it's too good to be true, don't, especially if somebody running a show, they promised all that, it ain't going to happen.
Right.
And I said, it was our first lesson of, you know, if somebody's, you know, telling you something, you know, they're running shows, it's going to be this and that, it's not going to be.
Right.
I ran into Gibson about 2 years later. He actually worked a Terry Rice show.
And
it's Rick Valentino. and I was talking to him, and he said, what was going on? I said, tell me the truth. What was up with that show? And he said, I heard you went to jail. See, we heard he went to jail for it.
Oh, wow.
And he said, that whole thing was a scam. He said, I got sucked in on it. There was people wasn't hurt no car wreck. They were trying to get insurance money from a car wreck. And he said, that was all a scam. And we all got busted. And I didn't know anything about it. They lured me in and put me in on it. And I had to go searching times because it was for, like, you know, fraud and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, dude, you were sticking stitches with them, man.
Wow.
It was supposed to, you know, a fundraiser for these people's medical bills, you know, and they were hurting this car, and they wasn't hurt, man. They were trying to, do an insurance fraud, you know,
right.
Insurance thing. And it was all fraud, and they busted him on it.
What?
And he was part of it, so he went to jail. And, last time I saw him was like 94, and never heard nothing from him since. So.
That's wild, man.
Yeah, it's some crazy stuff, you know. That was our first, you know, getting into the business. And
right, yeah.
Learning that, you know, everything got all on the up and up, you know. It's another thing I realized I didn't talk about either. We did the thing where we worked, where Sam and Manier started running again in Lewisburg, and we worked, Chris. Started going back, you know, training with Chris and everything. So I started, you know, I was doing that. We were doing that on Wednesday night, and he'd have different people, you know, come down and train with us and everything. And like that night at training, one night he said, he said, man, you need a name.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, a name? He said, yeah. He's like, Mr. Charisma, he said, we need something. And he said, that's just, you know, I can't do nothing with that. I said, okay. I said, all right. I was like, you start thinking of something. And he said, I want to save the charisma, but think of a first name. So, Wolfie rode back home with me back to Nashville.
Uh-huh.
And so I was talking to Wolfie. I was like, what? I said, Chris wants me to call the first name. I was like, what? You know, what's something good? And he's like, I don't know, man. He's like, Chris, he wants me, you know, I'm going to start going toward the, you know, the gate, you know, gate gimmick, you know, start going toward that.
Uh-huh.
Let's try to find something, you know. And I said, all right. So I was telling Wolfie that, and he said, Wolfie said, what about, I said, what about KC Charisma? Yeah, Wolfie said KC Charisma, and I liked it. So that Saturday, oh no, it was a Thursday night in Shelbyville, you know, that, and I told him, I said, Wolfie said KC Charisma. I said, I like that. And he said, no, no. That ain't gonna work. I said, okay. He said, I'll have you something by Saturday night. I said, okay. So Saturday night in Lewisburg, he's like, I got your name. I was like, all right, what is it? He said, Quentin Charisma.
Huh.
I was like, okay. And he said, it's gonna be spelled T-O-N, and Charisma is gonna be spelled Q-U-A instead of the C-H-A.
Uh-huh.
I was like, he said, Charisma. I was like, oh, I got it. So I was like, so October of 92 is when I became Quentin Charisma. So,
wow.
I figured that was kind of, you know, something needed to be told that I forgot. Even the name thing.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, sure.
So that's kind of a,
the origin of who you are.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, but, so that was basically all the, I guess we can go back to the spring of 93 if we still have time.
So like at this time, spring of 93, you, all this stuff that you've just gone over, like, I mean, are you like living your dream right now? Are you, I mean, does it feel like, cause you're actually, it's funny because you keep going back to Hartsville and you know, you're in and out of, you know, places like Lewisburg and McMinnville. So you're working quite a bit, you know, and you're kind
I'm
of,
working, yeah.
You're right part now, of, you're one of the boys at this point.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Cause like spring of 93, you know, winter of 93, spring of 93, right at that time, you know, I was doing the training on Wednesdays in Shelbyville, Thursday nights working the show in Shelbyville, then on Saturday nights working the show.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't making, still wasn't making much money, you know, well, actually wasn't making any money. But, you know, I was working more shows and, he put me in a program with Wolfie. In Lewisburg in, it was probably like March, end of March, early April of 93. Me and Wolfie worked a little 3-week program. And, I went over the first week and I put makeup on him and all that. And, you know, he cut the interview of like, you want to put makeup on me? And he's like, you know, next week we'll have he's like, I'm going to beat you. I'm gonna put you in full makeup, you know,
uh-huh.
Wig, dress, everything, you know, loser drag match, whatever, you know. Okay, just sort of that line, you know.
Yeah.
So we had the match, and the thing where he slides in the ring, jumps me, throws me out, goes over, slams my hand to the table. I get color. And I got color good for the first time too. It had it real good color.
Uh-huh.
And we rolled all the way on the building. Well, he just, you know, was beating me all around the building. Then we get back in the ring, we go on the match and everything, and then I cut him off, get my heat. You know, he gets his comeback boom. We're going to the finish. He beats me. And he got me in the sleeper, put me out in the sleeper. And so I was still out, and he starts putting the makeup on me. He put the wig on, put the dress over me, and put the wig. Sorry about that. And he went to put the makeup on, and Marcus got up. Manager Marcus, uh-huh. He drew him. So we went over there, and he slid a purse in. The purse had the brick in it. So I come over there and I boom him from behind, and you know, I leave him laying, and I get on him and beat him up, leave him laying, and then next week come back, they set up a match. And I said, next week, I think it was no DQ or something like that. You know, I hit him with the purse and all that.
Yeah.
And he came back the next week and, you know, finished it off. He was just there for like 3 weeks, and he was going back to the Jarrett. So
was that before he was PG-13?
No, this was they were already PG-13.
They were?
Yeah, this was when they were off. When they first got let go first time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because him and Jamie, they actually worked 2 weeks. Actually, I think Jamie worked. I think they worked up 4 weeks. The first week, him and Jamie, because actually they rode down with me. The first week they worked Lewisburg, and then the second, third, and fourth, it was just Wolfie and Jamie. I don't know what happened to Jamie, but it was just me and Wolfie, and that's when he put us in that little 3 week program there,
uh-huh.
little angle. So that was like the first, actually, after, we started doing singles and, Chris wanted to start to do something with me, and that was, first kind of, because before I was just, first second
sure.
match, just there,
So what was that,
when
you actually started getting, when they started writing programs for you, and now you have a gimmick, did you do things like, how did you... How did you decipher how you were going to act? And were there certain things that you played off of or certain ideas that people came up with for you? Or how did that all come about?
Well, the first time I started doing it, I started doing everything. I had the name changed. I really wasn't doing much at all. Not really. I just really wasn't doing nothing. And I just went out there. The pink stuff and the blonde hair.
Yeah.
I was getting, the homosexual chants.
Yeah.
Chanted at me and everything.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have to really do nothing. And it wasn't until actually, I tell you, it was probably a couple weeks after I ended the angle with Wolfie. Actually, the first time I actually did a little something was with Giant Scorpion, Pete Cannon, Wolfie's stepdad.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you ever heard of him. You ever heard anything about him?
Not much at all, no.
Okay. Well, Big Pete, he was legit at least 6'8" and 400 pounds. He was a monster, dude.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was like a week or two after I got done with Wolfie, I got to the show, and Chris was like, hey, I'm more at it was and they Okay, let me start. Go back a little bit. Pete and Cool Breeze, they had a falling out with Freddie Morton in Columbia.
Uh-huh.
So they called Chris and about getting bookings. And actually, it was Rick Reynolds, too. He was working as the medic. And they all had a falling out with Freddie Morton. I don't know what it was about. And they called Chris, and Chris was like, he told me his payroll was low. They cut him. They cut Chris a deal. The three of them to come over.
Uh-huh.
So they came over the first night, and I saw Pete that first night we worked in Columbia. That one and done we did.
Yeah.
He was there that night. So I didn't know him. I just knew of him. So I walk in, Chris, like, oh, you're only working Pete. Go over there and talk to him. He's going over to see what he wants to do. Just listen to Pete. I said, all right. So I walk over and said, how you doing tonight? I said, how you doing? I said, Chris says to meet you tonight. And I guess he forgot who it was. I mean, right. I met him that one time. He's like, how you doing? I was like, how you doing? I'm Quentin. And he said, what does he want? He said, just me to ask you. He said, he wanted you to go over. He said, tell me, listen to whatever you tell me. I said, okay. He said, so what's your gimmick? I said, like a homosexual gimmick. And he said, all right, so what do you do? And I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, Gorgeous George. I was like, no. And he's like, I said, I'll tell you what. We're going to go out there and we're going to walk and talk. Just listen to me. We ain't going to do much. And because he was so big. I mean, he had to be in his mid to like 40s at this time, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, I said he's like 6'8", 400 pounds, bad knees. But still can move. I mean, to be that big and old and bad knees, he can still do stuff, you know?
Right, right.
So he said, what are those little things? I might unzip your little suit there and give you some socks. And said, when you sell it, I want you to scream like a little sissy. He said, be scared. He said, be scared of me. He said, because I'm a giant. He said, and you're homosexual. You're playing the sissy part. He said, prance around, and then when I go to lock up, you scream and prance off, be scared, That was the first time I ever,
right.
I just walk out there and get the people just yelling, homosexual at me, So after that, I started doing more stuff, if it wasn't for Pete, because Chris never said nothing about doing it, He was kind of saying, he never gave me actual advice about doing it, what to do, so it was kind of like, Pete kind of stored me in the direction, and then I went with it,
Sure.
So I owe Pete a lot, and he helped me out. Pete actually, later on, Pete helped me out a lot. Pete really helped me out a lot later on. I have to give Pete Cannon a lot of credit. He really helped me out on a lot of things.
He
advice and stuff and get me bookings and stuff. He really kind of took me under his wing and helped me out a lot, So I owe Pete Cannon a lot,
Yeah.
I have a lot of people, he didn't have to, he kind of, took me under his wing a little bit and helped me out,
Right.
So I'll always be really appreciative of what Pete did for me, So.
Right.
But yeah, that kind of did that. Oh, and there was something else that happened that time, right around that time. We was in Lewisburg one night, and Chris was booking my mind just went blank. Oh crap. Tom Burton. Tom Burton.
Yeah.
And see, Tom was bringing in, he was bringing guys from Japan and bringing people from Puerto Rico. And they were coming over staying with him, and he would bring them to Lewisburg to work the shows.
Really?
And yes, and I can't remember the Japanese guy's names because he worked Japan. He worked the UWFI, I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was.
I remember one of the guys' name was Jimmy Lee, and I never forget me and Marcus. We walked in and we went over introduced him. The guy goes. And he goes, I'm Quentin, nice to meet you. And Marcus, I'm Marcus, nice to meet you. And he goes, you're Jimmy Lee. Jimmy Lee. And I was like, oh, that's all I'm not going to remember. And the other guy I had no idea what Doug was. His name, he couldn't speak any English. But the only English that guy spoke was Jimmy Lee.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, so But then he brought some people in from Puerto Rico, from Carlos, and, you know, they were basically young boys, you know.
Right, right.
And, but,
yeah, Tom Burton was married to Candy Devine.
Yeah.
He had that raspy voice. He always talked like this. I'm Tom Burton.
Yeah, he had that raspy, that old raspy hill voice. Talking about it, strong as an ox. Man, that man was strong. He was so strong. So we were there one night, and he worked, Chuck Casey. It's not Chuck Casey, but everywhere Chuck goes, he rubs people's feathers the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so we was in there, and me and Mark, you know, they were the main. So we're sitting there, and we then got dressed. So Tom comes back, and he's just like, arr, 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 you know.
Yeah.
So Chuck comes in from the other. So we're in the National Guard Armory, and we're all in the big locker room. You know, they got separate doors. So Chuck comes over, and he's walking across through the lockers, and he comes over and goes, he said, "Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it." He said, "That was really good." He said, "Of course that was good, because you're the... SHIT. And Chuck goes, "What?" He said, "You heard me. I've been hearing all you've been talking about. You're going to Japan. You ain't going to Japan. You've never been to... You'll never go to Japan. You don't even know anybody." And he just... He said, "I'm lucky I didn't pick you up out there." He said, "Don't you ever tell anybody you're going to Japan. If I ever hear about it again, I'm going to break your neck." And I'm like... And I was sort of like, "Oh, my goodness." And Chuck's like, "I don't know what you're talking about, Tom." He said, "I've heard you've been telling everybody around Nashville, you're going to Japan to work." And I look at Marcus, and Marcus was like, he's like, "Tom's like a yeti." And Marcus was like, "He's for real, he's a yeti." And I was like, "Oh my God." And luckily Chuck shut up and turned around, went and grabbed his bag and left. He didn't get dressed or nothing. He grabbed his bag and left. And I was looking at Marcus, and the way how Marcus said, and he said, "Man, Tom was about to get him."
Yeah.
And because Marcus trained with Tom.
Oh boy.
And Marcus and Gary Valiant and Billy and Gary's brother Billy Scott, you know, they all trained with Tom.
Uh-huh.
And Marcus said, "Yeah, he's about to get him." And the story was that Chuck was going around Nashville, all there's a gym and strip clubs and everything, like he could go do a tour in Japan, and got back to Tom, and so
Tom took issue with
Casey
that.
Chuck Casey got heat with everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard any stories about Chuck Casey, but he even got into it with Mongolian Mahler in Lewisburg. Actually, that first time we were ever there, back in '92, him and Chuck and Mongolian Mahler got into it, Peter Arbella. But so that was like the last time I saw Chuck.
Uh-huh.
He disappeared again. So, but that happened. But it was crazy. I thought, man, because Tom would have killed him. that was the two arguments that almost led into fights that I've seen so far in the 2 years was somebody in Chuck Casey. So
really.
Yeah. So
wow.
It's not a favorite of the boys, I guess you want to say.
Yeah.
So, how much time we got left?
Well, Q, we are sitting at an hour and 10 minutes already. So let's wrap it up and let's keep this as being basically like, you know, kind of a refresher podcast. And we'll pick it right back up where we left off last time. And we'll, instead of waiting so long to do the next one, let's try and do another one maybe next week.
Okay, let's go.
How does that sound? I've been so crazy busy, man, for the last month that, you know, totally got out of the routine of everything. And so we gotta pick things back up and get back on track and everything. And so this was a good podcast because it was kind of a little bit about everything, about little different times, about here and there. So it kind of brought us all back up to speed. And then that way next time we can just pick right up where we left off.
Okay, because like May of 93 is when stuff starts happening for me. You know.
Yeah, and I don't want to shorten anything. You know, I want to make sure that we're able to spend the right amount of time on each thing as we go along through it. Let me ask you a question, Q. Do you watch current wrestling?
Yes, I watch. I watch WWE. I usually get like a month behind on NXT, then I just binge watch it after a couple of days and pick up. But this week I have not watched WWE. I think I'm gonna take a break from it, and then I'm like a year behind on ROH. For some reason, I just stopped watching it, and I'm like 8 months behind on my Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Because I was watching it. I've been watching it forever, and then I'm about 8 months behind because it's like when I got my Roku and I started watching stuff on YouTube, I've kind of went away from watching. I used to watch Championship from Hollywood every week.
Right.
You know, and now I'm like 8 months behind. I'm behind the Ring of Honor. So I'm going to have to one of these, I guess, this summer, just kind of, I guess,
power through it.
Trying to catch up. Yeah, trying to catch up. But I think I'm going to take a break. I think I'm going to take a break from New York because I don't know. I'm not getting, it's just, well, I don't know, something about it. I never watch.
I have not been a, I have the network. And a lot of times, you know, I'll watch, old stuff here or there. Whenever they drop, I love it when they actually, you know, add new vintage stuff on, because then I'll binge watch that, you know. But otherwise, there's times where I'll go 3-4 months and I'll never turn it on once. I just keep paying for it for some stupid reason. But I do like having it if I ever want to turn it on. I am not a fan of current wrestling, and I don't watch much. But me and my wife watched, or I don't want to say watch. We started Raw this past week, and holy crap, man! It was just, and my wife doesn't like any wrestling at all, you know. So we're trying to watch that, and she's just looking at me. She's like, "Really? This is what we're gonna do?" And I was like, "No, I don't think we are gonna do this." So So what are you watching? What are you watching right now?
Actually, today I watched Puerto Rico, like 3 months of Puerto Rico from 1990. I watched like about 4 hours of that, and I've been watching like on YouTube, and I'm like, what else have I been watching? Everything I've been watching has been on YouTube. Actually, I'm watching that Puerto Rico. How do you say his last name? The guy from Dominican, where he put him over for the belt, and the NWA didn't. See, that footage was supposed to have been lost, and that was like the holy grail. That and the Battle of Atlanta. Those two things were like the holy grail of tape trading for years, and nobody could ever find it. And somehow the network found the Battle of Atlanta, Rich and Sawyer Cage. Well, this guy I don't know if you remember a guy who used to be on Crazy Match? His name was DJ Mike Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, was you on there back, this has probably been 10, 12, it's probably about, it might have been about 05 probably.
Sure.
05, 06. Somebody, he said that he had found a guy that has the footage.
Right.
In the Dominican. And he was going to save up his money and go down there and buy from the guy And supposedly, like 6 months later, he got back on there and said that he had got the tape and said he was not going to put it out until he knew he had it, he was going to make enough money to pay for his trip down there. And everybody was saying BS, that all it's BS, you know?
Yeah.
So it never showed up. And then all of a sudden, man, this Facebook site, it's mostly Puerto Rico stuff. One day, man, last week, this guy posts the match.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm like, what the crap? I was like, there he is. Nobody, I posted and I said, where did this come from? I was like, this is supposed to was not been shown the light of day.
Right, yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, somebody posted on it. I was like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, the whole match is on there.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's I've been watching that they put like matches on that Facebook. I can't remember the name of it. It's Puerto Rican wrestling. It's just all, you know, Carlos and stuff, basically. Yeah. Old Carlos and stuff. I've just been watching matches of it. I watched a match the other day on there from like, I want to say it was 86 with Tommy Rich and Abdullah. You know,
oh, wow.
I had to watch it. I was like, that's just two total style difference,
yes.
You know?
So yeah.
I watched it. And I was like, well, they both bleed like stuff pigs.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was like, I gotta watch this, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, they put, like, single matches and stuff on it. So I've been watching a lot of that. And somebody put, like, a whole year of run of, WWC from, like, early 90, all the way going into 91. So I've been watching that this week. So. I'm gonna take a break from WWE. Probably thing I'll watch from them will be NXT. And I think, like, me and my wife, we like watching pay per views together. So we'll probably watch pay per views, but like the regular shows, I'm probably gonna be a while before I watch them again.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, man. I'm right there with you. Well, Quentin, thank you again for joining us for this journey. And
I forgot to ask you. I'm going to cut you off. Did you ask Chris Michaels about Danny Midget D?
No, man, I completely forgot about it. I saw. So you did you hear that Bandana wrestled Chris Michaels at the fairgrounds on Saturday?
Yeah. I saw you posted. I haven't watched it yet, but I saw that you posted it. I'm going to watch it this week.
I had to post it. So it was supposed to be Sean Hoodrich. And we're there, and we're setting up and everything, and we're getting the green screen set up, and we're doing all this stuff, and Chris gets there, comes in, and about 10 minutes later, I see Bandana and Kenny and Hammerjack in the corner.
Yeah.
And they're talking, and I can see Kenny's like, you know, if he's not here by so and so, then are you good? Are you good to do it? And Bandana's like, yeah. So he walks away. I'm like, so did you just get booked? And he said, yeah, I just got booked. First time in 7 years Bandana wrestled in the fairgrounds. And he wrestled Chris.
That's the best person to work, Michael.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I mean, you don't have to worry about looking bad because he's going to make sure you look good.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But we'll talk about it next time. It's about to cut off here. We'll do this again though. We'll have another one posted up next week, and when I get off the line here, me and you will set up a date, okay?
Okay, that's cool.
All right, thank you, brother.
All right, thank you. God bless.
A big thank you again to Quentin. Real quick, I want to shout out Joe Sart. I want to shout out Jeffrey Hall, Monica, Destiny, all the great fans that came out this past Saturday at the National Fairgrounds for Overdrive Pro Wrestling. We are currently doing the editing on that. WrestleTopia TV was the producer of the event, and we are editing that. You know, the main event was Colt Cabana and Austin Aries. So that was a fantastic match. Cabana and Aries was great. Johnny Bandana coming out of retirement to take on, you know, the headliner Chris Michaels. Jimmy Valiant, the Rock and Roll Express, the Heat Seekers, the Carnies, Robbie E. Just a stacked show. Terry Runnels. I had Jerry Lynn there signing autographs. We're doing the editing right now. You can check that out at PivotShare at WrestletopiaTV.PivotShare.com. I've just uploaded 3 new events, not new, but new to you events at WrestleTopia TV. Fight for the Mind 2, which was an event that I was involved with in Murfreesboro, Tennessee in 2016. The Best of Showtime All-Star Wrestling is now online. That is Reno Riggins' company from 2010. Is, you know, from Chase Stevens to David Young, Eric Andrews, and just phenomenal talent from top to bottom. Included in this is the Chase Stevens versus Andy Douglas cage match, which was Andy Douglas's retirement match, which we did not know until later on. Which you can also see the documentary that I shot of that same exact night, also on WrestleTopia TV. So, head on over there. It's WrestleTopiaTV.PivotShare.com. Check it out. You can subscribe for $4.99 and watch everything that's on there. Or you can buy each individual thing or even rent them if you just want to check them out for a couple of bucks. So thank you again. I have some interviews coming up on Sunday of this week, next Wednesday, next Sunday. So we're back in the swing of everything. We're going to talk about some of the stuff like the Impact tapings that I was involved in. We're going to talk about the Strawberry Slam, the Standard Slam, Overdrive. It's just been show after show after show. There's more shows coming up. So we're going to get to everything over the next couple of weeks. So thank you for listening. If you enjoyed what you hear, tell a friend. Make sure you contact me, JD Sloan. You can find me on Twitter. You can go to WrestleTopia on Facebook. Interact with me. Tell me what you want to hear, who you want to hear from, and I'll make it happen. Remember, tape trading in the 90s was fucking awesome.